You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 21 May. Today, 1927, Charles Lindbergh became first person to fly solo across the Atlantic. 5 years later on the day, Amelia Earhart became the first woman. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Common Mepulwane, really tough Bowen results, what they, almost 900 less units sold. Famous brands, revenue is up, but profits down. That is, costs are hurting. The consumer, short answer, struggling. Chris Gutter from Astral Foods, profits come roaring back as avian influenza is largely gone. I want to ask about vaccines. Can't we vaccinate the birds? Bianca Bortis from Citadel Global on what drives moves in our currency. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of our investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. SA Bank executives coined it during COVID. Banks paid out hefty bonuses even though performance targets were not met. Business Day, top Anglo shareholder backs a breakup plan as BHP deadline looms. Legal in General supports the breakup. They're only about 2% of shares. But more important, the deadline for BHP to make a firm offer is tomorrow, 7 p.m. our time. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.1, Nasdaq up 0.7%. Over in the east, it's red. Sydney's a couple of points weaker. Tokyo is up 0.2, Hong Kong down 2%, and Tencent down 2.7%. Commodities, red, gold, $2,413 an ounce. Brent, $83.26. Platinum, $1,043. Palladium, $1,012. Rand is $18.21. Bitcoin, $71,300. And top 40 looking for a red open, around 310 points or 0.4% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Staying now with our Common Mepulwane, independent analyst. Common, appreciate the early morning. The Baldwin results, I mean, really tough. I mean, it just shows how the consumer is struggling in many senses. They sold, 896 less units, revenue down a third, headline earnings per share off 48%. A bit of a horror set of numbers, truthfully.
Yeah, very, very difficult, Simon. I think the key, as you said, is the number of units that were sold, specifically 32% down. So that definitely had an impact both on top line and bottom line. But as you mentioned in your intro, it's definitely the consumer demand that's been impacted. I mean, if we think about it, you know, in today with the rising inflation, you know, are you going to buy a new apartment or a new home, or are you going to actually feed yourself? I think that's what it's come to at the moment, that loan affordability has just literally gone out the window for most people.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're hard choices, but at this point, an apartment can probably wait. And Famous Brand kind of reflects this as well. I mean, their revenue was actually a little bit higher, but costs were hurting, which saw HEPSOR 5%, revenue up 8%. I mean, they, again, consumer-facing. And to your point earlier, you might want to buy food instead of an apartment, but you're probably going to make that food at home rather than go out because, again, price.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Famous Brands has been trying for a really long time under the current CEO to adjust and restructure since the beginning of COVID, when there was lots of pressure. But it's a bit of a mixed bag. So you've got to remember in their stable of brands, the leading brands includes names like Steers, Debonairs. But what they have said was that they saw better performance coming from the casual dining, which is Wimpy and Mug and Bean. So what that effectively is hinting at is, because of load shedding, people are likely going into the malls where there is a backup power and actually just having a quick sit-down meal, as opposed to going to the Steers or Debonairs that's unlikely to have backup power still. So just a bit of a twist on the usual, where we say, you know, people aren't going out to eat, etc. So as you've mentioned, top line slightly up. unfortunately, profit margin is down, and that, of course, is on the back of that rising inflation that's impacting the input costs.
You mentioned the restructuring. They're doing a fair bit around that in terms of their back-end kitchens. They're moving some. They say they've got some very old equipment that needs upgraded. It's a bit of a cost at this point, but it's going to serve them well, particularly, I imagine, in future years. I mean, it'll just be more efficient and cheaper and better margins when finally all in place.
No, and I think that's the key here is, you know, what is management's strength? They've also added on to what you've said is that they're looking to unwind or offload some more non-core assets. And that's the key, you know, get a streamlined operation that functions, I suppose, on the most cost-efficient basis with the most efficient assets.
Yeah, no, I take your point 100%. Comrade Meprani, independent analyst, appreciate your early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, around the Famous Brands results. Have you been eating out more? Are you taking that opportunity? Or perhaps when there is some load shedding, have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Chris Skitter, CEO of Astral. Results for 6 months ending March saw revenue up 4%, headline earnings up 441%. Chris, appreciate the time. I want to dig into the distinction between the HEPS and the revenue. But first question, when we chatted last, avian influenza, bird flu had been a major issue in your life and truthfully in much of the industry. Is that largely behind you now?
Simon, yeah, we often get asked the question. We can never say that because the flu is still prevalent in the wild bird population in South Africa and rife around the globe. So we haven't had any infections since November in South Africa or reported infections. But it's winter time now, and that's when the birds migrate from Europe to South Africa. So we are pretty much aware of the risk of bird flu and this winter coming up, and in the light that we didn't get any compensation for killing birds, which is according to law, you need to be compensated if that compensation is necessary to control the outbreak. And on the other hand, there's no insurance against this. So in the light and the lack of vaccination, we're quite nervous about this winter.
Is vaccinating an option?
It is an option. It is new to the world and the poultry industry, not new to other industries, other livestock, but to poultry it is new. And we have got vaccinations for certain strains ready around the world. Some countries are vaccinating and South Africa not yet. But last season we had two very distinct different strains of the virus. We have developed a local vaccine as well, and there are two international vaccines available, but no permits have been issued yet by DALART. And this is because this is so complex in South Africa. It's new to both sides of the fence, for DALART or the government and for the industry. And it's a very delicate process and program to follow. So we are in conversation on a weekly basis, and we're trying to resolve this as soon as possible to get permits issued to vaccinate.
Your other giant challenge obviously was load shedding. We haven't had any in a bit. I mean, obviously it's abated to a degree. Are you able to manage it better, albeit still at cost when and if it happens?
Yes, the prior period we went from nowhere to stage six overnight, and I don't think anybody was prepared for that stage six at extended periods for months on end. And we spent quite a lot of capital on installation of generators. That has been done, but at stage six during the prior period, we burnt to the tune of 45 million rand additional diesel just to keep those generators running. Now, the cost associated with that is not just the diesel, it's also the birds stay longer on farm and you have to feed them, and feed is
Yeah.
65 to 75% of your cost. And that was the big cost burden. During the past 6 months, we rectified the bird shape and size and age on the farm. We improved our basket offering to the market because the birds are no longer that big. But we still have the embedded cost of diesel now. The past 6 months was just slightly above 100 million rand additional diesel cost.
SAFEX prices, obviously a huge input to your sales. Prices are, they've come down a bit, but they're still, frankly, they're still fairly elevated and a cost pressure to yourself as well.
Yes, if you look at the two planting seasons and the prior season, we harvested 16.3 million tons of maize. Now with the impact of this El Nino phenomenon, we're 3 million tons down. So the stock-to-use ratio is quite depressed. And hence the price hikes over the past couple of months. We've seen it come off slightly over the past week or two, but that's mainly driven by the rand-dollar exchange, with the dollar weakening against the rand. So that assisted us a bit. And I think at this point in time, if we can get through this season with a smaller crop, the outlook, although way in the future, is already looking more promising than this current El Nino that are weakening. And we're looking forward to a new plant season that will start around October from a better base.
You had effectively been subsidizing chicken to the consumer during the influenza, the load shedding and all the other struggles. That certainly looking at margins, you're no longer doing that. You're able to get some price increases through.
Yeah, again, we had some assistance from lower cost, input cost. And then we had small price increases, nothing to the tune of what's indicated in the media from time to time talking about chicken price soaring.
Yeah,
definitely not that. We had a negative margin on poultry in the prior period, reporting period. This time around, we had a very thin profit margin of 2.4%. So nothing to write home about. And we often talk about that when people say chicken is expensive. Well, it's driven by additional cost, like your maize and droughts and like your lack of railroads, water, electricity, additional diesel, and the inflationary cost. So we are not profiteering. I think everybody will agree with a volatile industry like this, with a thin margin of 2.4%, it's nothing to write home about. It's too risky, this margin, for a big industry like this. And it should be at a higher level purely from a sustainable point of view in this industry and to keep on supplying the best value proposition to the nation.
What would be, from your perspective, a sort of a fair margin? And I take your point. You're not here to be a profiteer, but you're here to make a profit. You don't want to price gouge, but there needs to be some security of profit, I suppose.
Well, again, when you look at industries around the world and you talk to analysts and shareholders, I think to keep this industry sustainable, to have enough money to reinvest in technology and expansion and create jobs, something around the 7.5% net margin on chicken should be regarded as fair. That will leave enough money to pay a decent tax to SARS, the difference you spend between your loyal shareholders, and of course, reinvestment in the business. Anything below that, you struggle to reinvest in new facilities or expanding. You simply don't make enough money.
We have a day, Chris Kutter, CEO, Astral. Chris, always appreciate the time.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. When you invest in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the unpredictable ups and downs caused by day-to-day market fluctuations. Because our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Bianca Burtis, director at Citadel Global and also a currency foreign exchange expert. Bianca, appreciate the time today. The Rand, we kind of, and I've said this before on this podcast, we kind of take it personally when the Rand sort of goes weak. Although the flip side is we'll look out the window and see, I don't know, load shedding or something. And, you know, I told you so. truthfully, the Rand moves on much more broader things. And the key one is just economic data, but both out of major economies, most notably the US, but of course our own data as well.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, you hit the nail on the head. We are so close to it that we often can't see the wood from the trees. And that is the same when it comes to the Rand. So often when the Rand weakens, we tend to blame it on the pothole we drove through, or the fact that we didn't have electricity for the past 2 days, or, you know, even elections. And actually, when you start delving a little bit deeper into what drive currency markets, it really comes down to the economic dynamics at play and not so much the individual events that we face on a daily basis.
Yeah, it is sort of those bigger picture. What about trade balance, however? Because ultimately, a rand is something that's been bought or sold, and stronger or weaker is depending how much is being bought or sold. Does our trade balance play into it much?
The trade balance definitely plays a role. And I think, you know, so often we look at supply and demand and we say that, yes, it's an oversimplification of what is actually happening on the ground, but it really comes down to supply and demand. And that is where that trade balance actually plays such a critical role. In essence, we are saying, okay, we are exporting an amount of goods, and to export these goods, we're going to receive foreign currency, sell it for rand. So there's a demand for rand. And when we are importing, we are actually selling rand, buying foreign currency, and creating a demand for foreign currency. So in the trade balance environment, if you are exporting more than you are importing, your country as a whole is going to have a bigger demand for rand than for dollars. And that typically translates into a stronger domestic currency. It also speaks to favorable terms of trade that obviously benefits the economy as a whole, and then the underlying currency. Because often what we like to relate the currency to is to say it's really the stock price of a country that we are looking at. And it tells a story about what is happening in a specific country, but not just on the ground of that country, in relation to its peers and other market players.
That's an important point. I like that. It's in relation, which then also means that geopolitical or just big events, you know, I'm thinking back to the 2008-9 crisis. It had nothing to do with little South Africa, but the world was panicking. So it was risk off and money flowed into the US and out of Tsar. There are those sort of bigger of global events that can, I was going to say for a short term, although not necessarily always short, but have an impact at the same time.
Yes, and I think we've seen a culmination of those events over the past couple of years. We've seen COVID, we've seen the Russian-Ukraine war, we've seen the conflict in the Middle East, and that all actually plays a role into how well the Rand fares. The Rand, as an emerging market currency, needs a positive risk environment to function in. If we are in an environment where you actually see a lot of instability, uncertainty, and fear for that matter, you see investors putting their money in what they call safe haven assets, such as the US dollar, the Swiss franc, the Japanese yen, and you see flows out of South Africa and out of other emerging markets into those safe haven assets. And then when this fear and uncertainty unwinds, you actually see that flow come back into the emerging market environment, where investors are willing to take on more risk for a higher return.
And then if we look sort of into the future and changing things, I'm thinking particularly, and we've chatted before around sort of AI and algos and the like, high frequency trading, could that have a sustained impact, or is that something that will be perhaps much more of a sort of shorter term, maybe a intraday or maybe a few days or a week or three?
I think if we start looking at the longer term trends coming through in the market, you know, these algorithmic trading, AI, that's definitely in the longer term going to have a significant impact in the way that we trade, price discovery, market efficiency, and that will all impact in the way that the currency responds. But when we look at it in the conventional sense and where we are today, that really has an impact on what we see on screen in intraday session, for instance, and what that algorithm, for instance, experience as being a good selling or buying level, and then pushing flows through on those particular levels and then skewing the market for a brief period of time.
Okay, got you on that. What about digital currencies and even CBDCs? I mean, central bank digital currencies. I mean, if we look back at the idea of Bitcoin, it was going to be, you know, the new currency. It's many things. It's not a new currency, but digital currencies and CBDCs, could that have an impact, or is that going to be largely neutral?
I think it's going to take a while for us to really start seeing the impact of those digital currencies and even the central bank digital currencies to start playing a role. As you mentioned, initially, everybody thought that the Bitcoin is going to replace the dollar. And now, a couple of years down the line, the dollar is still the dominant currency in the world. And the market hasn't really switched to these digital currencies. My view is that in the fullness of time, it will initially coexist with traditional fiat currencies, but that could eventually start impacting on trading strategies as they become more integrated into the global financial system.
We'll leave it there. Bianca Burtis, Director at Citadel Global. Always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. We were chatting with Pirthi Radenhurst yesterday from Hirenya Capital Advisors, talking around copper and how we get exposure to copper. He had a bunch of ideas. We asked you if you have copper exposure. Around 40% each said either yes, loving it, or no, missed the boat. He said he thinks it might come back. That boat might then sail again. The rest were asking how. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. TWK results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.